Blog Talk Radio.
This is Brandon Buddy on Stardish Radio. Enjoy.
Hey everybody, this is Kristen Alderson and I am on Stardish Radio, the coolest radio station ever.
This is Jason Tam on Stardish Radio. Tune in.
This is Brittany Underwood. Make sure to tune in to Stardish Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Stardish Radio on the Blog Talk Network. Today is December 3rd, 2008. I'm your host, Joanne. My number here is 347-945-5423. So make sure you call and participate with our guests. And tonight's guest, definitely participate in the chat room. Make sure you register, though, in the chat room because for some reason, I mean, it's free. It's really not a big deal to register and just so you can participate in the chat room. So, what is that? I'm sorry about that noise. I have Brandon on the phone. Brandon?
Hey, Joanne. How's it going?
Oh, gosh. I'm just having a little problem here with my screen. I had a problem with Blog Talk yesterday, and they made me go in and delete, like, all your cookies and all that other crap or something. And so now when I click on the switchboard, instead of popping up in the same window, it pops up in a different window. So it just, it's got me going a little crazy because I feel like I'm losing everything right now. So that's that. A little technically challenged today. Okay, real quick, let me do some show updates that I have to announce. Tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, there's a group, a musical group called Echo Cell. They'll be joining me at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Friday, December 5th, Michael E. Knight is returning to Stardish Radio with Bob Guinea at 10 p.m. Monday, December 8th, 2008, Elizabeth Hendrickson, formerly Maggie on All My Children and currently can be seen on Young and the Restless as Chloe Mitchell, along with her castmate, Bad Luckinbill, who portrays J.T. Hellstrom on Young and the Restless also. December 10th, Constance Towers, Oh Hail the Queen, Helena Cassadine from General Hospital, will be joining us at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. December 11th, Ron Moss from Bold and the Beautiful. Then finally, December 12th, Greg Ricard and from Young and the Restless and Jake Silberman from As the World Turns, 10 p.m. And a real quick plug for my dear friend, Catherine Hickland. Check out her show right here on Blog Talk Radio, Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay. With all that being said, Brandon.
Yes, ma'am.
Big mouthful. Tonight's guest portrays the only, and I find this so strange, that he is seriously the only doctor in Landview Hospital. I'm not complaining because if I had to go to the emergency room, I sure wouldn't mind being treated by him. So I want everyone to please welcome to Stardish Radio, Chris Stack.
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
How are you?
Oh, fantastic. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. You know, it's funny that I do feel like I'm the only doctor, but then they call in specialists from time to time.
Yeah.
Versatile. I know how to take care of everything to a certain level, and then they get the OBGYNs in, or they get the neurologists in, or they get, you know, the optometrists or the podiatrists or whatever in. Anything that I can't handle, they get somebody else to do.
And well, it's amazing because you're the one that they go to, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially since the OBGYNs can't be trusted in Landview Hospital, apparently.
Apparently not, you know?
Well, now, I mean, I haven't watched it today. I heard that she, I heard a spoomer, we'll call it, that she actually offs herself.
What's a spoomer?
That's like a spoiler rumor.
Oh.
I heard that she actually kills herself.
I'm not going to say anything about that on today.
Well, you don't have to. I'm just saying. You know, you hear these things on the internet. I try not to pay attention to them, but once in a blue moon, something catches my eye, and I have to say it.
Well, I will say there is, you know, there are gunshots heard at Landview Hospital, but I think as of now, it's unclear as to what has transpired.
Ah, okay.
So I can give you a little bit without ruining anything.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. So, Chris, let's start off with a little bit about you. Thanks for coming to take the time to dish with us.
Absolutely.
You know?
Thanks so much for having me. This is cool.
Oh, wonderful. So you were originally from Chicago and raised in Indianapolis. Tell me and everybody a little bit about the time where you decided that you wanted to do acting as a career.
You know, I don't know if it was ever a minute when I said, you know, I think this is something I want to do for a career. It was just a slowly developing process. I think started really young, and I mean, like, you know, around the age of 5 when I was doing like nativity plays in grade school, and then musicals. My first musical ever was in 6th grade, and it was just a lot of fun. And you know, you can't beat the attention.
Well, oh yeah.
You know, for better or for worse, that obviously has its pitfalls too. But and it was just, you know, a lot of my friends in high school did them and did the musicals and did the plays, and I was the professors who directed, or the teachers who directed, and who directed the musicals and the straight plays were kind of mentors of mine, and so I just liked to spend time with them, and when they encouraged me to do something, I trusted them that they were right and that they had some kind of insight into something that I may like and be good at. And so I just kind of went for it. And then my good friend Jenny encouraged me my senior year in high school to try out for the fall drama. Every year there was a fall drama and a spring musical, and I'd always done the musicals but had never bothered with the dramas, and my friend Jenny encouraged me to do it. And I auditioned and got the lead role in The Crucible, which was, of course, a fantastic play. And, you know, everybody being 17 and under, it kind of evened out the age disparity there between the, you know, the actors and the roles. But it was just a great experience, and I'm forever grateful to Jenny for encouraging me to do that, because I think that was when I kind of realized that this is something that I would like to spend a lot more time doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on to college, and though I was an English major, I spent a lot of time in the theater and did a lot of student-directed one-acts and then the big main stage productions, kind of to a lesser extent. But and then just kind of, you know, just really, really enjoyed it. And it's a wonderfully therapeutic and cathartic occupation. And you know, obviously to get a plum job like the one that I have on One Life to Live is just a really great, validation, and then just also just to kind of, you know, to be able to make a living doing this is fabulous. I have to remind myself every once in a while that I do get paid to do this because it's so much fun to do.
Is it true that you're a member of the Actors Studio, Chris?
It is. That is true. Yeah.
That's amazing. Can you talk a little bit about the not just what we see on TV, but you know, the process of, I mean, it's huge rigors getting accepted, I'm sure. Can you talk about the whole process of applying and enrolling and getting in and.
Sure. Yeah, the TV show has pretty much little to do with the studio itself other than in name and obviously, you know, the discussion of craft and artistry is very very much a part of what the studio is about. It's a 50-plus-year-old institution that was established by members of the group theater way back when, and without going into a historical diatribe about the whole thing, it's basically a place where actors come to work and come to work on their craft and explore their art and amongst their peers with no casting directors or producers or, you know, anybody, you know, kind of otherly critical, kind of breathing down their neck. And it's a really wonderfully free place to take risks and fall on your face and do stuff that you would never be able to do in the real world, casting wise. And yeah, and because of the nature of the studio, there is a really rigorous auditioning process, and which basically includes, or which basically consists of several rounds of auditions. One where you audition and then are either made a working finalist or not, and you're welcome to audition as many times as you like.
Yeah.
If you are not made a working finalist, you can come back the next year and audition again. And if you are made a working finalist, then you're basically in a kind of purgatory where you can work and you are encouraged to work, but you're not quite fully a member. And then once your next audition comes up as a working finalist, then you're either made a member or not. And sometimes you lose your working finalist status, or sometimes you keep it, and then you just kind of go through the whole thing all over again.
Wow.
But, you know, it's a wonderful place, and in order to kind of, you know, maintain the level of work that you want, or that we all want, you know, without sounding like a snob, you just can't let everybody in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And how great is it to be able to actually collaborate with writers and with directors in that kind of safe environment? I mean, it must be it must be a dream.
It really is. And, you know, it's a very, you know, actors are funny, and I don't always mean funny in the best way. So it's just a great community, you know, that is made up of a really diverse group of people, and most of whom are actors. There are a lot of, there are some other programs within the Actors Studio that kind of foster relationships between writers and directors, and writers and directors and actors. But at its core, it's a bunch of actors who are just passionate about what they do and want to continue to explore themselves as artists and also the theater as a medium. So it's a wonderful little oasis to go to in a business that can get very businessy, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
inside the studio itself, is the TV show kind of looked down on, or is it celebrated?
I don't think it's looked down on by any means. I think it's a wonderful program, and it's really unique in that it's a talk show that you know, where lots of stars, quote unquote, come to talk about their craft and not talk about their love life and not talk about their tabloid life. So I think it's really appreciated within the studio community itself. And but it's just a different kind of arm of the thing that is really more or less. I mean, there are obviously connections between the two, but you know, it's not a big part of what the studio is. And it's wonderful also because it provides a certain amount of income for the studio, which is, you know, members pay no dues. And so to run the place and to keep the building in great shape, you have to have funds.
Yeah.
So it's been a wonderful source of income for the studio itself that, you know, that just underwent a massive rehabilitation of the building itself, which is in this great old church up in Hell's Kitchen that needed a lot of work.
Well, that's all. I love watching Inside the Actors Studio, so I can only imagine being a part of it. I love James Upton, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, the studio, you know, the studio itself, the studio itself, the sessions are, you know, they're work sessions that are 2 hours twice a week. An hour devoted to actors' work on a particular scene, and then some feedback, and then another scene and feedback. And the TV show, obviously, as you know from watching it, is you know, an in-depth exploration of one person's life and craft, which is really fantastic. But it's I mean, they're both really great for their own reasons, but what you see on TV is very different from what actually happens at the studio.
Right.
So now let's switch over back to One Life to Live for a second here.
Sure.
Now, I was reading that you were actually on One Life to Live in 2003 as Brad White and worked with Nathaniel Marston.
Worked more with him than with anybody else, probably.
Yeah. So, like, how strange was it for you when you found out after when you did your test, you didn't know that's the role you were going out for, right?
I didn't. I figured it out in between takes of my screen test. Mm-hmm. Which was really funny because I, you know, the sides that we read in the audition were, they were fictional. They were made up. They weren't real characters that they were auditioning for. But, you know, none of us knew that. So by the time we got around to the screen test and I got to the studio and Kathy Breyer was there and I had remembered her and she remembered me from, you know, years ago. And then we started... it seemed to me that something was up, or maybe that, you know, Kathy was just so generous with her time that she volunteered to stay late or something, but I didn't really put it together until we were working with Frank Valentini, the executive producer who was directing us in this scene, and it kind of started to seem familiar, something I had witnessed once upon a time. And then we're up on the floor, you know, going through the blocking and, you know, on the set with the lights and the cameras. And we did the scene once, and Frank came back out and gave some adjustments. And it all of a sudden just occurred to me, and I looked at Kathy and said under my breath, is this for Nathaniel's part? and she, you know, gave me a wink and a nod, and, you know, sure enough.
Wow.
And I also, you know, I had heard about... you know, a soap actor being in trouble, but I hadn't put attention to it, and I didn't, you know, honestly, I didn't know it was Nathaniel, so I didn't really put it together. But
right.
Probably good, though, because I had other
Absolutely.
Stuff anyway, so I might have worked.
Well, I mean, I have to say, recasts are extremely touchy with fans, especially when the actor has been on soap for so long, you know, him playing Al and then rolling over into Michael. I personally have to say that I am enjoying you so much as Michael.
Thanks.
I think you're doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
And the way you came in such a heavy storyline, I mean, you were thrown to the wolves. It must have been just incredibly tense those first few weeks in that heavy storyline. It must have been
more than I am, and honestly, at the time was very grateful for the level of stuff, because there wasn't any time for tension. There wasn't any, and of course I was nervous. But I'm nervous. I get nervous about everything that I care about, no matter how prepared I am for it. So to have that amount of stuff to do in the first weeks I was on the show was really kind of a blessing, because I didn't have time to be nervous and I didn't have time to be distracted, and there was so much that was going on and so much that had gone on and so much that the other characters I'd worked with had gone through. So there really wasn't, it was a chance to get to know everybody really intimately, really quickly.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, had I started off really slowly, you know, with a few scenes here and there, I don't know that I would have done as well as I felt like I did. And I definitely, you know, it took me some time to get into the part and into the show, and really felt like I was comfortable on set and really comfortable in the skin of the character. But I think getting thrown into it like that made the process a lot speedier. So it was definitely a roller coaster, but it was a blast, and if I had to, I would do it all over again, no question.
Well,
and
now
was everybody terribly supportive of you on, you know, in the cast?
Incredibly.
I mean, it was a tough situation, and I hope that everybody kind of gathered around you and helped you learn the ropes.
They really did. Everybody was so supportive, and any questions that I had, you know, there was no question too stupid, and, you know, whether content-wise about the story or about the characters or just technically about working in that medium in front of you know, multiple cameras and, you know, under those lights and on those sets. So, you know, there were a lot of terms that I just didn't know, and everybody was really supportive and really patient, and nobody, you know, nobody sniggered and nobody, you know, kind of rolled their eyes. I mean, they were really wonderful, and I remember specifically one of the stage managers, Keith, saying to me at the beginning of my second day, you know, I know you're here from 7 a.m. until I think the out time was 8:30 or 9 p.m. He was like, you know, we normally don't do this, but if you need any time to run lines or to take a walk around the block or to do whatever, you know, feel free to take it. And just having had that offered made all of the difference in the world, and I didn't end up taking any of it, and I didn't end up needing any of it, but knowing that it was there to take and knowing that people were that supportive and that understanding really made all the difference.
Wow.
And I did about an hour and a half early that day, actually.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad everybody was like that, because I know it could probably be tough sometimes with situations like that.
Yeah, it's always tough being the new kid.
Yeah, in any profession, not even, you know, so, yeah. I got a question.
Especially in a customer world like this.
You're right. I have a question from MySpace. One of my listeners who couldn't call in tonight, she wanted to ask, her name is Tony Ann.
Okay.
She wanted to ask you if it's difficult playing the scenes involving Michael's emotions about not wanting a child because of the Todd-Sam situation, being that he didn't play the part when all that occurred.
No. I think, you know, with any part that you take on, whether it's a play or a film or a soap, there is a certain amount of backstory that you have to fill in
exactly
yourself.
And commit to.
What's that?
And commit to.
And commit to, absolutely. I think, you know, soaps are a very rare medium in which you get to spend years with one character. And oftentimes the backstory that you're talking about is backstory that you've actually lived through. But mostly, you know, with film and plays and other television shows, you haven't lived through all of those things that you're talking about, so you have to kind of fill it in for yourself. So that's basically what I've done up until I got this job on One Life to Live, and so not having lived through that myself on One Life to Live, I just had to make it real for myself the way that I had before.
Right.
And also, you know, just I did go through those difficult times, you know, to a certain extent with Marcy and with Todd. And so it was very easy for me to
get into it
on how awful that was and how I definitely didn't want to go through that again.
And how did you fill in that backstory? Did you look at tapes or did you look at synopses or did you ask Kathy? How did you fill in the blanks?
I talked to all of the above, basically. I talked to Kathy. I talked to the producers. And, you know, I was cast on a Tuesday and started on a Thursday. And when I went up and met with Suzanne and Frank when I got the job, they, you know, they filled me in on, you know, where Landview is and who I'm married to and who I'm related to and who I've had falling outs with and who, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then they gave me some CDs of past episodes with Nathaniel in them, of course, that I could watch and, you know, just to kind of fill in some of the blanks.
Okay. Well, are you ready to take some calls there, Chris?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to go over to area code 312, Tony from Chicago. You're on the phone with Chris.
Hey, Joanne. Hey, Brandon. How you doing?
Hey, Tony.
I'm doing fine. Hi, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm good. I'm very good. Listen, I want to say, first of all, you're doing a magnificent job playing Michael McVane over on One Life, and you and Kathy are doing a great job, the dynamics between you and Michael and Marcy. And especially what they're going through right now with all the situation with the so-called dead baby.
Right. Thank you very much.
That's pretty much. I want to touch on a couple of acting abilities that you acting roles you did prior to this. You did a show back in the early 2000s called The Education of Max Bedford with Richard Dreyfuss.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a chance to do some scenes with him?
Not too many. Mostly, I was in the band that Richard Dreyfuss's daughter on the show had. So most of my scenes were with Katie Sackhoff, who played Richard Dreyfuss's daughter and is now on Battlestar Galactica. But there were a few scenes when Richard Dreyfuss that Richard Dreyfuss was in, and we didn't get a chance to work together very much, but he was around a little bit, so very nice guy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, and also in that cast, not only Katie Sackhoff was in the cast, but also there's a guy named David McCallum who now plays on NCIS, the crime drama on CBS on Tuesday nights with Mark Harmon. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Who was he on the Education of Max Bedford?
His role was Walter Thornhill.
Another teacher?
I think so.
Nice. Okay.
And one more thing. And you were also in the film. You was also in Jack Black's film, School of Rock, in 2003.
I was indeed. I've got a picture from that shoot up on my wall. Just a little Polaroid. I have kind of a postcard collage of good memories and good wishes from friends and family. And there's a great Polaroid that I had one of the wardrobe ladies took of me on set in front of the screaming crowd of thousands at this theater where we did the Battle of the Bands at the end.
Yeah, I love that movie. I love that movie. That was an incredible movie, that School of Rock one. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
I got that on my video library, and I watch that almost every time. And I may recognize you in there.
I know, it's a little different, right? I don't think Michael McBain would wear a camouflage skin-tight bodysuit, really.
No, I don't think so.
Well, Chris, I haven't seen it yet, but I think I'm going to have to see it now, okay?
Oh, boy.
I think you might have to.
Definitely have to watch it now. All right, Tony.
Well, just moving along. Well, I'll stick with you guys. Can I stay with you guys throughout the show?
Of course. Yeah, hang on a second. Okay, yeah. You know, my son loves that movie, School of Rock, and I just never sat down to watch it. I don't know, I'm just not a movie kind of person. I don't have the patience, I should say. So when I was pulling up your stuff on the computer, my son, so he's like, I know that, because he watches it like every other day. So, yeah, he knows who you are.
Excellent.
He knew, you were in it.
Oh, Joanne, it's a good movie.
I'm going to watch it now, okay? I can barely get through the soaps. You kidding me? I have no time. I will watch it. I definitely will watch it. All right, let's go over here to area code 352. You're on the phone with Chris Stack.
Gordon. Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Hey, Joanne. Hey, Brandon.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Great.
Doing
well.
Where is 352?
What?
Where is 352?
I'm right here. My name's Courtney.
What's the area code 352? What part of the country?
Oh, I'm in Florida.
Florida, all right. Where in Florida?
I'm in Hernando County. It's not very far from Orlando.
Nice. Okay, I have a good friend in Orlando. Anyway, sorry, not to put you on the spot.
It's okay. I have a question about your... what scene has been your favorite on One Life to Live?
What scene?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a tough one. You know, there are a lot of them. And all for very different reasons. I think I really enjoyed working on the scenes with Marcy in the diner. Where I was kind of talking her off the ledge and encouraging her to give up Tommy, just because they were really well written, and the director Danielle Feraldo and Kathy and myself had a really great day just kind of with talking about the scenes and really exploring them, and you know, working on them really hard to kind of, you know, to quote unquote get them right. And by that, I mean just kind of explore, you know, really what they're about and what's at the heart of that issue. And then, you know, there, I love working with Michael Easton. He's just a lot of fun to be around. And I remember in particular there was a scene that that Michael and Kathy and I were in our apartment. And there wasn't a whole lot of, I don't want to say point to the scene. There wasn't a whole lot of action. It wasn't, say, as important as those scenes in the diner. But there was something that that Marcy brings up about starting cooking again. And, you know, Marcy's character on the show is historically a horrible cook. And so we just decided to kind of work that in to the scene. And we added a couple of lines, but mostly it was just in the way that we played it. And we made it really just playful and fun and funny and goofy and ended up just, you know, having a great time with a couple of scenes that, you know, would have been fun, but were even more fun with, you know, a little creative license. So
I think you do a great job on the show, and I really like you as the new Michael. I mean,
I really like
Nathaniel, but I think you do a great job too.
Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate that very much.
Thanks, Courtney.
You're welcome. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, we're moving on to area code 904, which is Jacksonville, Florida, and that is Georgette.
Hello.
Hello, Georgette.
Hello. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I've met you a couple times. I think you're doing great as Michael McBain, and you're making it your own part. Like Joanne said, it's hard to go into a new role and kind of, you know, make it your own without the fans having say about it, because they can be pretty harsh sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's
okay.
Critic, you know.
we don't take well to change, so.
No, no, I know it. It was something I was prepared for in taking this job, so it's all good.
My question for you is, who is your dressing room buddy? And I'll ask you your other one after you answer that one.
Okay. Trevor. Trevor St. John is my roommate.
Oh.
How funny is that?
I know, right? Thankfully, our relationship offset is not as icy as it is on set. I let him do all the decorating, too, so I think that relaxes him a little bit.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And my other question is, since they're not putting Marcy with Michael or whatever, and if you were to pick another love interest on the show, who would you pick and why?
Nobody. There's nobody but Marcy. Nobody. I don't even know. I can't, it's funny because there's such wonderful people and wonderful characters, and I can't imagine Michael with anybody else. It just wouldn't make any sense. I mean, beyond the fact that, you know, just superficially it would tick everybody off, it just wouldn't, I just don't see it. So, you know, I've never really thought about that.
Now, a couple weeks ago, on screen anyway, it looked like they were kind of toying with the idea of you and Tika.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was something that, that just kind of came up, and, you know, and it came up in this difficult part or difficult time in Marcy and my relationship, and then, you know, never went anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there was a little
flirtation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it was mostly two people going through a tough time, just wanting to have a laugh and wanting to feel attractive and wanting to feel joy and wanting to dance and anything to kind of get out of their lives just for a second. So I think that bond, and I think that moment, or those moments, were really, they were genuine. They were just two people. They weren't two lovers. They weren't two single people. They weren't two, you know, rejected or jilted lovers or people. They were just two people looking for sympathy and really finding empathy in one another. So those scenes were really, they were really cool. And I kind of would have, it would have been nice to explore that more. And I don't mean in like a, in a sexual way or in a, you know, in anything other than a relationship way, and how you, you know, you turn to your friends when you're in trouble, or you, you know, you find these relationships in the oddest of places when you're just kind of set back on your heels and off balance. And, so I thought those were neat little scenes, and I would have liked them to maybe explore that a little more, but there's always, there's always time.
Right. Now, everybody in the chat room is going crazy. No, they can't see you. With Michael and Marcy just can't be separated, basically, is what they're saying.
Okay. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. No way. They just can't be. You can't have Michael without Marcy. You guys are going to be like the new super couple of Landview. So basically they're saying, Michael, get the kid, then get the girl, and move on. Let's go. They want to see a happily ever after for you guys.
We can't, our luck with kids is just
What is it like working with the children that play little Sam?
Those kids are great. They're really sweet kids. They're really, you know, there's two of them, right? So if one of them is flipping out, then he goes out to the lobby and his brother comes in. So whenever we're on set working with them, then they're always relaxed. Maybe the other one's throwing a tantrum in the other room. I don't know, but they're really sweet kids.
Cool. Well, Linda in the chat room wants to know what a typical day is like on set. We want to know who the pranksters are.
There's no such thing as a typical day, which is one of the great things about this job. You know, depending on, there are a lot of days when you're there just for half a day, or there are some days, you know, when you're there all day. And obviously, the longer you're there, the more you're working, the more, you know, you look for little distractions here and there. JP is he's a goof, and so he's a lot of fun to be around. And we just have, you know, we have similar senses of humor, and we're just both kind of ridiculous, and so he's a great guy to have around. And then, you know, honestly, it doesn't stop with just the cast. I mean, there's Paul in the wardrobe department who's always got a new joke. All of the guys and gals in the hair and makeup room are, you know, just really, really great. And everybody's got a great sense of humor. Bob Woods is, you know, he's a jokester. And you know, just everybody's honestly, like, my friends don't believe me when I say that there is nobody who I even remotely dislike in that whole building. I haven't met anybody who I have the slightest qualm with or feel the slightest bit awkward with.
Right.
It's an amazing place to work. And we all, you know, you have your good days and you have your bad days, but I mean, the good days outweigh the bad days 99-1, and the bad days are usually because you're tired or something, and just, or haven't eaten and are just kind of cranky. Doesn't have anything to do with anybody else going on there. So
now, have you had any blooper moments recently that you can remember that you would like to share with the audience?
Blooper moments, lots of tongue twisters. You know, especially the scenes in the hospital when you've got medical terminology spouting forth like a volcano, and you want to hit your stride right so you actually sound like you know what you're talking about and not as if you're an actor playing a doctor having Googled those words the night before. So, you know, lots of tripping over your own tongue trying to get, you know, seven-syllable medical terminology words out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no pratfalls or anything. Kathy did a good spit take last week.
Say what?
Kathy had a pretty good spit take last week, so we'll see how.
Oh, yeah?
That's pretty fun, yeah. There's a conversation.
Okay.
This will be, you know, this won't air for a while, but there's a conversation between Rex and Shane and Marcy and Michael in Rhodey's. And, yeah, Kathy, Marcy gets a pretty good spit take in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be nice if they put a reel together for the fans of the blooper moments and stuff like that. I think everybody would like that.
They do it, you know, for the holiday party. There's usually around Christmas time, in the weeks leading up to Christmas time, there's a lunch on the floor where everybody comes and, you know, hangs out, and then they show, you know, kind of a blooper reel, a highlight reel from the last year. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Well, they need to share. That's not nice. Tell them. Didn't their parents tell them to share when they were children?
Apparently.
They're crying out loud.
Apparently.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's go. We got another caller. Area code 847. This is Rita.
Hi. Thank you, Joanne.
You're welcome. Say hi to Chris.
Chris.
Hello, Rita.
You should read. I'm in Evanston.
Nice.
The town where Charlton Heston went to drama class.
All right.
So that's where I live.
Did he go to Northwestern?
Yes. So I live in the same town.
Excellent.
What I want to tell you and what I want to ask you is, you said you've seen skits of your predecessor. You know your character was brought back from the dead.
I do.
By the fans. Because, so if anybody complains, and I'll be happy to ask people I'm computer illiterate, so I have to ask people to help put their input. That was the reason. So I appreciate that you enjoy working with Marcy and that you don't see any other character, because that's probably the main reason they even brought Michael back from the dead.
Mm. Yeah, I think the you know, the fan response to Al's departure was such that you know, they had no choice but to bring, you know, not even bring back Al, which we all know can happen on soaps. People can die horrible deaths and then, you know, walk in fit as a fiddle 2 days later. But I think you know, I think Nathaniel's popularity was pretty instrumental in even the creation of Michael McBain as a character. So
yeah.
Well, that was interesting how that, yeah.
We watched Al die a horrible death on screen, so.
Uh-huh.
And that was also protecting Marcy. He was protecting Marcy. He was protecting her.
Right.
See, that was such a strong, poignant love.
Right.
And the one thing I don't think you realize even, I mean, your character, Michael was not against so much the fact of Marcy adopting the child as it was he was against her going through the pain.
Oh, absolutely.
See, that's what I think they're missing. It's nothing to do with not wanting. He knows she can't adopt. She can't have children.
I would love nothing more than to have a family with Marcy. And that, you know, the issue of adoption wasn't the problem. It was who the kid was and who his grandfather was and who that what family he came from. And, you know, I didn't foresee the kind of pain that we're going through now, but I foresaw pain and difficulty and, you know, just constant fear that this kid was going to be taken away from us and at any given time and any given point in, you know, within the first week or within the first year or, you know, after 5 years of living with this son. And, you know, having lost a son already, that's just, you don't want to willingly put yourself through that again. And didn't want to willingly put myself and Marcy through that again. I just felt like it's...
Do you foresee a Christmas miracle? Because, I mean, you know what happened. I mean, we all know what happened, what really happened.
Right. Maybe not a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's going to play
out.
That's
a little while. Sounds a little too soon.
yeah. I do know some vague details, which I'm, of course, not going to say.
Well, yeah, you're not at liberty to say. Actually, we're supposed to know. You're supposed to know less than we are.
Right. Well, Michael knows less than you do, but Chris knows a little bit. Just about the future, at least.
And we do know that wasn't, you heard the gunshots. We do know that it wasn't Todd because they've been advertising him seeing his wife on Friday.
Yeah.
His ex-wife. Yeah.
Taya Delgado does come back, yes. Okay, Rita, I got to get another caller, honey.
Well, thank you. Will you let me still remain listening? Because I love listening.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And thank you. It was nice meeting you, Chris. I hope you come back.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to 813. You're on the phone with Chris Stack.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, hey, Maggie. Chris, I'm sorry, that's Maggie.
That's okay.
How do you like to work with Cuddy? I love Cuddy.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more
time? She's saying, how do you like to work with Kathy, because she loves Kathy so much.
Yes, I do too. She's a wonderful woman, and obviously incredibly talented actor, and you know, the consummate professional, and also a wonderful collaborator too. You really feel like you're in the room with somebody.
I will. Yeah, I want to meet her one day. I really want to meet her one day.
I'm sure you would like her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd like her, and I'm sure she'd like you too. She's a wonderful woman.
Okay, bye.
All right,
I need to deep now.
Okay, bye, Maggie.
Bye.
So sweet, so sweet.
Yeah.
Haven't heard from her in a long time, huh?
Where's
Maggie?
That's
been a while.
Where's Maggie at?
And Maggie lives in Florida.
Lots of people.
Yeah. Yeah, there's we have a lot of listeners from Chicago, Florida mainly, you know, some from California in the chat room that didn't call in tonight, but they're in the chat room. Everybody in the chat room, are you guys talking about Chris? Chris, do you sing?
Do I sing?
Yeah.
Oh God, no.
Okay, then they're talking about
something else. I sing, I sing to myself, and I sing when I have my headphones on, but nobody's going to pay to hear me sing, if that's what they mean.
Well, Kathy is a hell of a singer. Have you had a chance to hear her sing yet?
Kathy's an amazing singer,
She is incredible.
I haven't heard her nearly as much as I'd like, but, you know, there were those scenes where she was singing to the baby, basically, to Hope, before she was born. When she was setting up the room, putting together the crib and stuff, and I purposefully made it a point to be on set for that so I could hear her. She's an amazing voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does.
She has an amazing album called Heartbreaker, and she's incredible.
I've got a copy. She just gave me a copy of it last week. I've got it sitting there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So are you going to check her out on the Divas of Daytime tour?
Are you kidding? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I almost did the road trip to Altoona, Pennsylvania, but I couldn't make it.
Oh, did you? Aw. So, Chris, now with the holidays coming up, what are you going to do for the holidays? How are you spending them this year?
I'll be back in Indianapolis like I usually am with my folks.
Indianapolis, go Colts.
What's that?
I said go Colts.
Absolutely go Colts. They've been struggling, but, you know.
They're pulling it together when it counts, though.
Exactly. If you would have told me at this point 2 years ago that they were going to win the Super Bowl that year, I would have said you were crazy.
Exactly.
Or that the Giants were going to pull it off last year, I would have said you were crazy. So there's always nobody, count nobody out. Just because Tennessee
would be leading the division this year.
Yeah. I mean, they can take all the – Tennessee can take all the division titles they want.
Okay, football men. Football, football. I feel like I'm talking to my son. Football, football. let's see. Well, now, Chris, do you have any special traditions you do during the holidays with your family?
you know, they're just, they're very basic, family-oriented, having dinner, building a fire, just spending time recently, just spending time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, no special outings or no special this or special that, just really, just being together.
Being together, yeah. So now, on One Life to Live, is there anyone there that you haven't worked with yet that you would love to work with, that you want screen time with?
You know, I want to work with everybody. Brody and I have not worked together, and I have a great relationship offset. I mean, just off camera, I guess.
Right.
Would love to work with him. Patricia Elliott, I would love to work with. She's just she's an acting legend, and I, you know, really, Bree Williamson, we're actually, she's producing I'm not sure if I'm even supposed to be talking about this, but she's producing a film that a bunch of us are working on together, and I don't know how long it's going to take, but we're kind of, you know, there are a lot of people from One Life who are working on it, and we're just kind of taking our time doing kind of guerrilla style shooting around New York, and so it's given me an opportunity to work with a lot of people who I don't get to work with on One Life to Live, and like Bree and John Brotherton and Brandon Buddy and Robin Strasser and Melissa Archer.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's great, and obviously, you know, I'd love to be able to work with them on One Life to Live too. But you know, if it ain't gonna happen there, then we'll make it happen someplace else.
Well, yeah, that's great. I mean, is it just from One Life to Live? Because I know that, like, right, Brandon, with the movie, I don't know if you heard of that movie, Manhattanites, with Eileen Kristen and you know, some actors from All My Children. That was directed by Darnell Williams and Gregory J. Martin. It basically was cast of all soap actors.
Nice. Oh, I don't
kind of just, yeah, they kind of just got together. I guess, yeah, you could probably ask Eileen about it. They were actually trying. I know I had Gregory J. Martin on the show, and they were trying to pitch it to SoapNet, being that it is mainly all their actors, Forbes March and everybody's in that movie, and they were trying to pitch it to SoapNet to air on, like, their Sunday night movies, but they got shot down. So they were a little disappointed over that, but they had a big screening in Manhattan when it came out. So I know there's a copy of it out there somewhere, so that's good. I'm glad to hear that you guys are doing that. Good for Bree.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. It's a really good script. Her first name is Gina, and I'm going to forget what her last name is. Apologies to Gina. Yeah, it's a really good script, and it's really fun. I don't think it's going to, you know, change the way the world is run, but it's a lot of fun to work on, and very unique characters, and, you know, an interesting story. And yeah, it's good stuff.
Good. Very good. Go ahead, Brandon. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask Chris what he could tell us about Robin Strasser. Is she as cool in real life as she seems on screen?
Yeah.
Than life.
Yeah, and to be honest, and this is no reflection of her performance, because clearly she's wonderful. I think she's 10 times as great to be around as Robin as she is Dorian. She's larger than life. She's very very talented. She's very funny, and she's a very thoughtful person. And as we all have, she's got some wonderfully unique little quirks that just make her a great person to be around.
She does so much with so little on that show, and it's a true testament to her talent.
Agreed.
I'm sorry, what was that? Did you hear that noise, or was it just my computer? I'm telling you, Blog Talk has given me so many issues the last couple of days. I apologize. Say that again. What did you say?
It's those voices in your head.
You want to know something?
No.
Look, listen to me.
I'm preparing mentally for turning 39 this week, so I wouldn't be surprised if I am hearing voices.
Right.
I would not be surprised at this point.
Your birthday is this week?
Yeah, Friday. Ugh.
Friday. So what is that, December 5th?
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Chris. Now, you did a little spot on As the World Turns also, didn't you?
I did. Maybe two summers ago, maybe three summers ago. I don't remember exactly when. But, yeah, I played a coroner on three episodes of As the World Turns when there was a young serial killer on the loose who was killing all the young people of the town in very brutal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I was a very sharp-dressed coroner. I brought in my own suit for that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
With all the different soaps in daytime right now, if you couldn't play on One Life to Live, which one out there would you want to be on?
Wow. To be honest, I don't watch any of the other ones.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's rude to say.
No, it's not.
How could you have time?
Yeah, exactly.
I've met folks from all my children, and they're all wonderful. So I guess if I had to choose one, I'd say that one. And it's also close by.
Yeah, right. You ain't got to go to California for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God.
I don't have to go way out to Brooklyn either for us.
I think you're on the best one. So you got a pretty good deal.
I totally agree. Thank you.
You did. You got the pick of the litter. I'll have to agree with Brandon
Absolutely.
On that one, too.
Absolutely.
I want to say thank you for agreeing to come on and hang out with us, though, tonight. This hour went by too fast.
It went by too fast. I was wondering what we were going to talk about for an hour, and then I just looked at my watch for the first time and realized it's fine.
You know, everybody says, what are we going to do for an hour? It goes by really, really fast, and we get a lot of stuff covered. I love it. Love it, love it.
Thank you, Brandon, so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Really,
thank you for coming on. It was
really fun.
Yes,
it was great.
Thank you so much. And I really, really hope...
No, I was just going to say thank you to all your listeners for listening and asking questions. It's always nice to... You know, just to kind of be pushed in a thoughtful direction regarding this this role and this job. It's really nice.
Right. Well, that's what we're all about.
Everybody,
connecting you with the fans.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful. And everybody who, all of the fans have been incredibly supportive from day one. And I know, you know, Nathaniel's shoes were big ones to fill. And I blame people for missing them. But, people have been right there with me from the beginning. And I really appreciate it.
Well, you've done a marvelous job in a tough situation. You've really come in and made a memorable role your own.
Thank you. It's definitely a
great testament to
all
your training and all your talent.
Do you have a fan club or a website?
I don't.
Oh, you need to get one, son.
I've talked to. There have been a couple of folks. I'm so bad with names. Gosh, there have been a couple of folks who have offered, and I've appreciated their gracious offers, and I just like I'm such a technophobe, and I spend as little time like I check my email and I listen to music online.
That's it, right? Okay.
That's pretty much it. But
well, at least get a MySpace page and keep us up to date what's going on.
That's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that.
Okay. All right, Chris. Well, you have a great night, and thanks for coming on Stardish Radio, and we'll have you back real soon.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
All right. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in tonight, and don't forget, tomorrow, Echo Cell, and Friday, Michael E. Knight and Bob Guinea will be back. So have a great night, and signing off for Stardish Radio.
I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells. Oh, those holiday J-I-N-G-L-E bells. Oh, those happy J-I-N-G-L-E B-E-double-L-S. I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells. Oh.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride. ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow
Doodle.
In a one-horse open sleigh.
Today.
O'er the fields we go
Doodle.
Laughing all the way.
Today, bells on bobtail ring, making our spirits bright.
What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Fun
it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
I love those.